Hey guys, and welcome to Hunting Land, presented by Great Days Outdoors Magazine. If you'd like to stay up to date on hunting tactics, land management, land values, and land market dynamics, this is the podcast for you. This week's show is brought to you by Great Days Outdoors Magazine. If you're frustrated with typical hunting and fishing magazines and tired of reading content, then for guys that are up in the North or up in the Midwest, check out Great Days Outdoors Magazine. Don't get left behind following the guidance of guys who don't fish or hunt in your home state. You can pick up a Great Days Outdoors Magazine subscription, and it will help you become a better Southern outdoorsman. Great Days Outdoors Magazine can be found at your local Barnes & Noble, Books A Million, Tractor Supply Company, Rural King, Bass Pro Shops, or you can save online at greatdaysoutdoors.com. And also brought to you by LS Tractor. LS Tractor is known for building top-quality, high-value tractors. Headquartered in Brattleboro, North Carolina, they specialize in tractors ranging from 22 to 101 horsepower. LS Tractor offers a full line of subcompact, compact, and utility tractors, as well as a growing list of implements and attachments. LS Tractor is committed to providing personal customer service and quality products through an exceptional dealer network throughout the U.S. and Canada. For more information on LS Tractor or LS Tractor products, please visit lstractorusa.com. Start blue, stay blue. And also brought to you by NCX. As a landowner, the more income I can generate from my land, the better I can take care of it. That's why I use NCX. NCX helps over 20,000 American landowners like you understand and maximize the value of every acre. Find new revenue streams for your land with programs like timber, carbon, wildlife habitat, solar energy, and more. Get started with a free account at ncx.com and discover the true value of your land. I'm your host, Joe Byatt, here with my co-host, Butch Theory. Today, Butch, we're going to be talking about something that you and I have been getting more and more and more into, and this is really something that it's important. I always find myself running out of time to do it, but that's trapping. And really not just how to do it, but why you should be doing it. And I think a lot of people overlook this as a management tool on their property. They think, you know, I've never done that. Why should I start doing that now? There's a lot of reasons for that. The fur trade being one of them. I mean, what you and I grew up doing, you didn't really need to trap. There was enough people trapping.
Right.
That they didn't need your help, you know, because there was a fur trade and there was people out, you know, keeping these predator populations in check. That's not the case now. You guys have seen an explosion of nest predators at your place. I don't know if I'd call it an explosion, but I've definitely got coyote problem.
Yeah.
At my place, just kind of harassing my place, to be honest.
Yep. And that's not a great feeling. I mean, when you got kids and dogs running around, I don't love seeing coyotes running all over my place howling, to be honest with you.
Right. Yeah, no.
Definitely going to impact your fawn count as well. As we know, they eat a lot of fawns, and there's a lot to it, man. It takes a lot of time. We've definitely gotten into trapping raccoons. I've never trapped a coyote. Have you ever trapped a coyote?
I have been there when somebody else got one.
I've never seen one in a trap.
But I want to get one myself. There's a couple running around my property that are big old darn coyotes, and they're kind of igniting a spark inside me to get into it. And I also like the the need to be detail oriented with it. That plays to my analytical side. So, but you know me, I can overthink it too. So,
no, not you.
Well, we're going to try to keep it on the 101 level today. We're going to be talking about the why and the how of trapping with Mike Severing. We're going to get into some basic stuff you can do, some basic sets you need to understand, some basic locations you can look to set traps on your property, how you can manage your effectiveness. And also my favorite is the mistakes that you see people making a lot of the time, because I'm one of those people. So today's guest is Mike Severing. Mike, welcome to Hunting Land. You know, I was out on my property this past weekend. We were doing some other habitat management projects. While I was out there doing it, we set a few coon traps, a few dog proofs, just to kind of give the kids a little something to do. We didn't take it too serious. I think I put out five sets, and I had one trap. One of the five sets, I had a trigger in, but it didn't catch the coon, so I wasn't doing something right. I want to solve that problem, and then I want to figure out what I did wrong on the other four sets or if I did anything wrong at all. But before we get into that, tell everybody a little bit about your background, how you get into trapping and what you do with trapping.
Well, to start out with, I've worked for the state of Alabama for retired several years back. I was the state fur biologist and district wildlife supervisor out of Tuscaloosa. As far as my background, I've got a BS and a master's degree in wildlife management. My primary point of contact was red fox and gray fox. Made enough money in college to actually pay for my college education.
Wow.
That is not the case nowadays with the price of fur, I can assure you.
Don't want to lead anybody down that path right now, huh?
Not on fur prices. Maybe on a predator issue or a nuisance control type thing, yeah, you can make some pretty good money doing that. But bottom line is fur prices have bottomed out here for the last 10 years or so. So hopefully they'll come back, but you never know.
Well, that's
okay, go ahead.
That's a really cool story. I hear that a lot when I read about trappers and talk to trappers, and I find that a lot of folks got into it for that reason. It was a good side income for them.
Oh, yeah.
Is that the only reason you think people should be doing it? Obviously, it's not really a thing anymore with the fur market. What are some other reasons people should be trapping right now?
Well, it's just like any other game species. You have to manage that population.
Mm-hmm.
Can't let a population go unchecked. And that's basically where we're at on just about all of the fur-bearing animals. With exception of a few, we're starting to see some numbers dwindle, but there's research being done to try to find out what that problem is and rectify it. So all I can say is trapping is an integral part of wildlife management. If you're a landowner, you need to implement trapping on your property. If you want turkeys, you want deer, you want more game species, quail, you about have to get in there and get after those predators. If not, they're just going to eliminate your population, take them down to a fairly low level, which is not what any sportsman wants.
Absolutely right. It was funny. The reason I ask you that question is I had my two young nieces out there with me this past weekend, and we were setting one of those dog-proof traps, and she said, "Uncle Joe, why do we trap raccoons?" And, yep. You know, I know why from a academic level, scientific level, but I had kind of a hard time explaining it to her because she's thinking of it from a tenderhearted point of view. How do you explain it to a kid?
Well, I had the same situation this past weekend. I did a trapping class in South Alabama, in Troy, Alabama. We had approximately 25 kids and 25 adults there. It was a pretty big class. Our primary concern was predators, i.e. coyotes, fox, bobcat, and especially raccoons. We ended up catching quite a few raccoons in dog proofs. And that was some of the questions the kids asked. I said, "Well, let me ask you this, boys or girls. Do you like seeing baby deer fawns?" "Well, of course I do, because they're cute and cuddly and everything else." But you have to relay the fact that those young fawns are a food base for an increasing coyote population. You know, when those fawns hit the ground in July, like here in Alabama, usually mid-July, early July, those coyotes change their food habits. They go immediately to deer fawns, a vast majority of them. Some of them still are on fruits and berries, but they're like us. Their seasonal intake of food changes from year to year and from season to season. You know, I don't mind eating a good watermelon in the summer, but they're hard to find in the middle of January.
Right.
If you know
that's
what
right.
I mean.
Absolutely.
So that's a lot of it. And then you have to explain the disease aspect of it too, which a lot of folks don't understand that. You know, these predators, especially raccoons, are primary carriers of not only rabies, but they carry parvo, distemper, internal and external parasites that are not real good for humans. Some of this stuff, there's an internal parasite, I can't remember the exact name of it, but if you ingest the larva of that parasite from a raccoon, over time it will cause you to go totally blind. It'll get in your eyes.
Oh, wow.
You'll lose your sight because of it. So you have to explain the big picture of it. You know, I understand where they feel like they're sympathetic for the coon itself, But we as professional wildlife biologists, we don't manage just one animal. We're managing the entire population, and that's how we have to look at it.
Yep.
That makes sense to me. And that's kind of the way I tried to explain it to her. You know, I said, hey, we're trying to manage everything here, not just the deer, not just the turkeys, and also, you know, not just the land. I mean, we've fragmented the landscape such that maybe makes it a little easier for certain species to make a living, and we got to make sure they're all kept in check if you're stewarding a piece of property.
That's right. A little bit of diversity.
That's a great point. Now, you mentioned several reasons there why we should be trapping and what we should be trapping.
Mm-hmm.
I know for a fact we have a ton of raccoons because I see them. I see them on game cameras primarily. So I know that we need to get on the coon population. You mentioned the fawns there and the coyote population booming on those fawns. How do we know if we need to get serious about trapping predators on our land?
Well, on raccoons, yeah, if you got a heavy raccoon population, they're going to impact your nest production on turkeys. You start seeing busted up nests, it is primarily a raccoon where they have rummaged through that nest and destroyed it. Their number one nest predator is them, possums, and every now and then feral dogs or cats will do the same thing. If you start seeing that happening, you're not getting a heavy lot of production or success out nesting, I would attribute some of it to predators. Of course, you got a wet spring and you're going to have a lot of those turkey poults drowning because that's just the way it is. If you've got adequate habitat, you should have a good number of turkeys in that area. The same thing goes with deer. I mean, if you start seeing, when you're out getting your fields ready and you start seeing a few spotted fawns, not like you have always in the past, I would attribute a lot of that to predation. There's been several studies done over the past couple of years. Some friends of mine did one years ago in northeast Alabama and part of northern Georgia and the Carolinas. They trapped live coyotes. They radio collared coyotes. They followed the coyotes back to their den site. In one case, they thought it was a fox den, but it was coyotes. When the fawns hit the ground in July, in about a 30-day period, there was approximately one dozen to 14 deer fawns went into that coyote den.
Wow.
Now, that's just one breeding pair of coyotes. How many breeding pair do we have throughout the Southeast?
Right.
A bunch.
I mean, that's a dramatic amount of predation.
And I think, like you said, I mean, I look around at my property and I'm seeing a decent turkey population. We've been having pretty good hunts. I'm not seeing a lot of coons on my game cameras, but I'm also not feeding, you know, so
that makes a big difference.
I would think that's helping me some, but also just I set a number of traps last year and didn't catch a whole lot of coons, you know, didn't have a real high ratio. But what I did notice in my deer population was I got a lot of does running around, adult does running around with no fawns. So that makes me feel like I've got a coyote issue that I need to solve. Is that an accurate, you know, just one, you know, small sample size boots on the ground assessment?
Yeah, I mean, that's one facet of it. When you're setting a trap, I always tell these students, I say, why do you want to set the trap on this side of the road?
Mm.
And the coyote tracks are on the other side of the road. I mean, he's not walking, say, the right side of the road where you want to put your trap. Put it where the sign is. If you don't have adequate animal sign, either scat, tracks, or, you know, scent post type things, or like on an otter, they'll have what they call a territorial marker. It's a bunch of fish scales around a pond where they've pretty much predated all your good fish in there. If the sign's not there, why set the trap? You're wasting your time. Always set on animal sign. And another thing, when you're making a trap set, if the wind's going from north to south, what side of the road do you want the trap on? I would put it on the north side so that scent that you have put out carries across that travel corridor that he is walking down.
Right.
All that makes, you know, that's common sense type stuff, but a lot of people don't think of it that way. They're just in a hurry to get out there and catch them, and they all want to catch a coyote. And let me tell you guys, coyotes, they don't live long being stupid. Let's put it that way.
You know, going back to the coon situation, last year was my first year to really, in my mind, try to get after the raccoon population and try to take it somewhat right. serious. I mean, I've got about 200 acres and I bought about three dozen dog-proof traps. And, you know, we kind of did what you just described. We didn't really scout or look, really try to think too hard about where we were putting them. We just went around the perimeter roads and, you know, put them at this intersection and this little ditch and this little creek. And I was disappointed with the number of coons that I caught. I think, you know, on a setting 36 traps, we might catch three or four each time we set them. And that kind of diminished as we went.
Right.
Well, do you think, you know, it'd be hard for you to know, but is there a way to gauge like how effective you're being in terms of when do you know, man, I just need to pay more attention to where I'm putting this trap out. Like, do you have a general idea of success ratio on coons, or is it just totally dependent on populations? And
it depends. Now, I can tell you this, and I've made a study of this over the last several years. When you get a DP or a dog-proof trap, it's usually brown or green in color, isn't it?
Mine are brown.
It comes from a manufacturer just like that. Get you a can of white Rust-Oleum paint and spray paint them white. That will work on private land. Yeah, what it is, you're going to be using their senses against them. You've got the smell coming out of the trap itself, and now you've got a visual attractant bringing his attention to that.
Interesting.
So you're using two of his senses against him. And it seems to work better from what I've seen.
We tried this weekend putting a golf ball on top of those dog-proof traps. One, just to keep the rain out, you know, keep the moisture out. But I was kind of hoping that same thing would prove true, you know, give them a little visual stimulus. The jury's still out on how that's going to work. I hadn't said enough of them, but it's similar to what you're describing there and painting them white. Why did you say it works on private land? Like, that makes me think you don't think it'll work on public.
Well, it'll work on public, but the problem is the word is public. Everybody in the world's out there. And they see that white thing, they're going to go investigate it. And it may not be there the next day when you get back. If you
I see.
Understand what I'm saying. Yeah. I've been in this 50 years. I know how people react to certain things.
Yeah, no doubt about that. Well, Mr. Mike, one of the biggest problems that we have and that I see people having is that we live several hours away from our land.
Right.
So it's hard to, you know, you don't want to set a trap and then leave for a week, and that's just not kind to the animals you're trapping. I know that seems kind of counterintuitive, but still got to be humane and respectful.
Sure.
When we do live several hours away from our property and we're going up for, you know, 2 or 3 days at a time, what's the best method to trap when you don't have a whole lot of time?
Well, let's address it on two different aspects. First off, state law here in Alabama says a foot restraining device has to be checked every 24 hours.
Okay.
Other states vary. If you set like a beaver trap, a trap in water in Alabama, it is a mandatory 72-hour trap check. My rule of thumb is with these varying temperatures that we have here, I mean, it's going to be 80 degrees tomorrow. And 2 weeks ago, it was down in the 20s. You leave a beaver in the water 3 days and it's 80 degrees, you really don't even want to go near him.
Right.
He's as big as a 55-gallon drum. So my rule of thumb is check every trap every 24 hours.
You know, I was just thinking, a good rule of thumb, checking every 24 hours, like Butch mentioned, you know, say you've got you're a weekend warrior like we are most times.
Right.
Are you putting yourself at a disadvantage? I mean, I know I recognize that any trapping's better than no trapping, but like, would it benefit landowners and folks that are interested in trapping out predator populations? Would it benefit them to take some time off and try to string 3 or 4 or 5 days together where you could run that trap line consistently? Like, if you said, would it be better to run traps Saturday and Sunday and then again Saturday and Sunday, or just take off like a Monday and Tuesday and run them 4 days in a row? Is that going to help you with your catch and success ratio?
Well, the more time you have the traps out there, the better your odds are going to be. You know, these workshops that I do, we run one night. If we don't catch, we don't catch. I would love to be able to do a workshop with kids where we ran 3 or 4 nights. Your percentages would go way up. The other point is, if you're setting foothold traps, say for coyotes. Coyotes have a large territory. They may not come around by that trap for another 3 days. It may take a week. So the longer you can leave it in the woods, the better you are. But you still have to figure out how to do it within that 24-hour time check to be legal.
Yeah, it's true. I've noticed that on game cameras. Got a really big, I'm guessing it's an alpha. I've got a really big black coyote on my property right now, and I've been seeing him pretty consistently in the same spot, but it's very sporadic. Yep. Like he's there, but it's maybe every 10 days, every 12 days.
That's right.
That he likes that trail, you know?
That's right. Now, another animal that tends to follow that same pattern is river otter.
Hmm.
They may blow through an area every 3 or 4 days, or it might be a week before they come back down on that trail. They're just like a coyote. They have an extremely large home range.
Mr. Mike, you mentioned that the dog-proof trap, painting it white, that you could smell the smells from it, or they could smell the smells from it, and you're also using some visual cues there with that white paint. What baits and lures do you like to use on those? And does it vary species to species? Fox, raccoon, obviously a raccoon's going to eat something a little bit different than a fox or a coyote, but what's your favorite baits for each one?
Oh, yeah. Coons are omnivores. They'll eat anything. Coyotes are meat eaters. I mean, they will occasionally raid a garden and eat your tomato plants. I've seen them eat okra before. But the food base changes. Let's concentrate on raccoons. Personally, what I'll use is sardines. Sardines or jack mackerel works real good in the wintertime. And again, this is trapper preference, what he likes to use.
Right.
What works for me may not work for the other guy. The other guys I know, say they got a problem in a cornfield, or a farmer's got a problem with coons raiding their corn in the off season. What do you do? How do you catch them? Fish isn't going to work. What are they eating? They're eating corn. Bait your dog proof with corn. A trick is get you an empty Gatorade bottle, fill it 2/3 of the way full of just shell corn, and pour vanilla extract in it and let it soak for about a week or 10 days. Utilize that as bait. Again, you've got a visual with the color of the corn, and you got that sweet smell from that vanilla extract. And with that white trap combination, it's almost deadly on those coons.
Butch, we tried those Tutti Frutti's this weekend and marshmallows. The problem was I couldn't get my boys and my nieces to quit eating them. You know, they
no
were
doubt.
It'd be bad to catch one of your kids and one
right.
of them by the
I had to coach them on, hey, eat these before we put them in the trap. Don't eat them after.
Oh, yeah.
My raccoons seem to like chocolate Pop Tarts.
Well, you know, some of them like gummy worms or Swedish fish, like candy. It's just different time of year, different bait. Same thing as always.
I want to go back a little bit and come back to the bait. I want to stay with coons for just a second. We have kind of an interesting piece of land because most of the places I've hunted over the years, been a part of, there's a lot of open ground. There's a lot of open dirt, and you can see tracks really well. My property is heavily vegetated everywhere. I mean, it's just very little open dirt. It's hard to see tracks. We were able to kind of slip along some little creeks and ditches, and we were able to find a few spots where we found, hey, there's a coon track, put a coon trap down. That's kind of was our real basic plan. And we did that. What are you looking for? If you're in an area, like you mentioned earlier, find the sign and put the trap there. Don't put it on the opposite side of the road from where you got the coon track. Put it right there. What else can people look for, though, if they're not like comes to mind, I've got a big creek on my property. There's a ton of den trees along that creek. I mean, it's just got to be coons up and down that creek, but I can't see tracks right there. What else should I be looking for?
Sure. Well, not only tracks, but scat, feces. Coons primarily going to have what looks like a chopped off feces when it drops out. Coyote's going to have more of a whip on it, like a dog would. And again, it's seasonal. When the persimmon trees are dropping, they're going to be full of persimmons. Not only coons, but coyotes and fox. They all go to those persimmons.
Definitely seen that all over.
Yeah, later in the year when deer season's going, you've got wounded or deer that have just been lost, or where people are dumping their carcasses after they get all the meat, the hide and stuff. They're full of fur and hair. And just look for different types of fecal droppings like that. It'll make a difference. Yeah, there's more to it than just that, than just seeing a track. There's a little bit of everything. Bobcat sign, cat, when he drops a load, with time, it'll turn white. They're missing some kind of chemical in their digestive tract that dropping will literally turn white as a sheet of paper. That tells you got bobcats.
Going back to baits and lures, and let's maybe kind of take that same line of questioning to coyotes. I mean, I think that's the thing. I know for me, I'm more of a turkey hunter. I'm doing pretty good on deer, I feel like, but I feel like I'm trying to help my turkeys more than my deer, so to speak.
Right.
And so I'm more focused on those nest predators, but I do think it'd be really exciting for my family. And we've got some coyotes that are harassing the property, and we see them all the time. Yep. And they howl and they run deer off the plots and all that kind of stuff. But I know that catching a coyote is a lot more involved than catching a coon. So when you're giving your trapping classes, like, what's some of your advice? Like, do you think people should walk before they run and maybe trap nest predators first, figure that out, and then go to coyotes? Or do you just throw them right into everything?
No. When I do it, I throw the whole wad out there for them. I want them to be successful. So we trap coons, and I explain to them that coyotes are hard to catch. There's a variety of different sets and food-based lures you can use. And sometimes later in the year, food has nothing to do with it. You can use a gland lure and a little bit of urine to draw a coyote to a set. And that gland lure is a sexual attractant. And at that time of year, they're looking for mates. So that's an effective type of thing to do. Later in the year, again, they go to fruit. They go to fruit. Their food habits change totally. Back towards the early winter, use any kind of meat-based lure. I'll tell you what makes a great bobcat and coyote bait. You can catch a beaver. There's a rule of thumb. Coyotes and cats love beaver meat. They love the smell of that beaver castor. You go out and you can utilize some of that, and I guarantee you, you'll be successful on those two species.
Interesting.
Definitely good to know.
When is there a source for that? Like, if you're unable to go and catch your own, so to speak, I mean.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, there's all kinds of manufacturers that make lures and baits. Just Google it up. There'll be all kinds of guys all over the West and down here. And they got some excellent baits and lures. And some of the bait that they use is just a pure concoction of beaver. Well, they put it through an industrial strength grinder and grind it up. The whole animal.
Ah.
And that's what they're selling. Yeah. With a little bit of extra that they won't tell me about, of course.
That's right. A little special sauce.
Yes, sir.
All right, folks, we'll be right back. Y'all take a minute and check out some of the businesses that make this show free for you every episode. This week's show is brought to you by Farm Credit of Northwest Florida. Farm Credit of Northwest Florida has over a century of experience providing financing for people who live, work, or play in the country. Farm Credit is here to help you make your dream of country living a reality. Their unique cooperative structure allows them to return some of their profits back to their borrowers. This patronage distribution effectively lowers a borrower's rate. To get started with your first or next land purchase, give them a call at 855-GO-RURAL or visit them at www.gorural.net. And also brought to you by Mallard Bay Outdoors. MallardBay.com is the Airbnb style marketplace for discovering and booking your next guided hunting and fishing adventures. The Mallard Bay platform was built by sportsmen for sportsmen. Their mission is to help expand access to affordable and successful hunting by connecting you with verified outfitters across the United States. You can browse trips and prices by state or species, select the dates you'd like to go, message outfitters, and secure your dates all from one platform, MallardBay.com. Not sure where you want to go yet? Reach out on Instagram or Facebook, and they can help you find your dream hunt. And also brought to you by Texas Hunter. Since 1954, Texas Hunter Products has produced the best engineered and finest quality feeders and hunting blinds in the industry. The Texas Hunter brand has become synonymous with quality and durability. By sticking to premium standards, the company delivers tough, long-lasting products that meet the real-life needs of anglers and hunters across America. Their fish feeders, deer feeders, hunting blinds, and outdoor accessories are among the highest rated in the industry. You can trust that your purchase from Texas Hunter Products will meet your needs for generations to come. To learn more, visit TexasHunter.com.
Mr. Mike, whenever you're doing these classes and you're kind of getting people started in this, what's the best trap to start with?
Well, a DP trap is almost a guaranteed catch. I mean, Those DPs have been on the market for close to 20 some odd years now. And if I'd have invented those, I would have a place in Alaska. Let's put it that way. Yeah, those things are, they're deadly on coons if you set them in the right location. Let me say this too. When I'm talking about doing these trapping workshops, it's not just me doing it. It's a combination. It's an effort between several groups. The primary group over here is Alabama Wildlife and Freshwater Fisheries. I initiated that program 18 years ago. And we run from November all the way to the end of February. Just about every other weekend, I'm somewhere in Alabama teaching a bunch of adults or landowners how to control predators. If it wasn't for the wildlife guys, it'd be hard to pull this off. The other group that helps tremendously is the Alabama Trapper and Predator Control Association, which is a private organization. We get funding from a variety of sources. I know that the Conservation Officers Association has helped us a lot in the past. This past year, Safari Club International, Alabama chapter, gave us a fairly large donation, and we utilize that towards these programs. So it's a great thing. It's a cooperative effort between a variety of outdoor groups. I just had to get that in there. It's very important.
Absolutely. It's awesome. It's an awesome resource that you have, because, I mean, we can talk about this kind of stuff on a podcast or write an article for the magazine or on our blog, but ultimately there's nothing better than going with somebody and putting boots on the ground and, you know, asking your own questions when you see things you don't understand. Speaking of that, I mentioned not always being able to find tracks. I mean, when I was focusing on coons, I'm looking at a lot of the drainages that I have on my property and just kind of figuring, hey, coons like to go to water. That's probably a good place to start. What other kind of habitat or terrain features do people need to be looking for if we're talking about coons specifically? I've heard people say intersections of roads. I mean, is that true? Is there?
Right. Sure, exactly. And that goes with any species of wildlife. Utilize those intersections. I mean, there's a potential right there to make four different sets on four different corners. You might double or you might triple right there. You just never know. Utilize that. Use fire breaks, natural travel corridors, rivers, streams, creeks, lowland areas. Anywhere where it makes a nice natural corridor for them, you're going to do well. Another thing, if you got a pine thicket, those deer are coming through those pine, you can see that trail. That deer is not the only animal utilizing that thing either. Coyotes, bobcats, I've caught a lot of stuff off of an old deer trail like that.
So don't worry about what kind of trail it is. If you see a good trail, that's a good spot for a trap.
Corridor of some sort.
Yes, a travel corridor is what you're looking for. Sure is. Now, what's funny is you get these old big boar coons, you'll catch them up on high ground in the middle of a pine plantation.
They go where they want.
Yep, pretty much, yep.
You know, we set, like I mentioned this past weekend, very lackadaisical with our effort, kind of doing other things. But we set, I think five sets and had multiple. I put out multiples at each set, mostly just to give the kids more to do. They were fighting over who got to set which trap and that kind of thing.
Oh, yeah.
But I've often heard people say, you know, hey, we're going to do a gang set. I mean, what makes you do a set, a multiple trap set versus just a single, vice versa?
Well, if you're up against one that's played the game before, you're going to have to go to a gang set. Say you've set your trap. Say you've set it for a fox, a coyote, or a red fox. If when you put your bait in that hole, if you're utilizing a dirt hole, do not be very careful not to drip any of that smell anywhere near that trap. He will literally dig that trap out of the ground. He may not throw that trap, but he will dig it up and flip it over. In that case, you're going to have to go to a gang set where you're going to back off maybe 10 feet and reset another one, just a pure blind type set or a scent post set. One of the biggest mistakes I see people do is they're not scent conscious. If you're out there and you're chewing tobacco or your buddy's out there chewing tobacco and they're spitting tobacco all over the place, what kind of impact is that going to make on that coyote? What kind of impact is it going to make on that red fox? He knows you're there.
For sure.
Having a bunch of youngins out there rolling around in the dirt. Well, hello. Now the whole site is fouled up by human smell.
No, my kids don't smell, Mike. I'm offended.
That's right.
I didn't mean to offend you. I'm just saying too much smell out there. Too much smell. You know, when I take a group of folks out and I've got 12 people out there with all their feet in the walking around in the woods, you know somebody, that coyote's going to smell you been there. It just has to.
Yeah.
He ain't never smelled that much human smell in his life, probably.
Yep. Well, so that's a great point. I mean, that seems like a mistake that could easily be made. Joe obviously made it last weekend.
Well, I mean, it sounds like if raccoon hunting is to, or raccoon trapping is to sitting on a food plot in a shooting house, coyote trapping is bow hunting with a recurve. Like everything right. starts to matter more is what I'm hearing.
Oh, exactly. That's right. Now, another mistake I see people make that are fresh learning how to, they continuously go to that set every day. They'll walk up there and look right in that hole and say, well, he ain't here. Go back 24 hours and do the same thing. Well, he ain't here. Well, he ain't there because you're putting scent down every day.
Mm.
When you make a set, walk away from it. Just leave it for 10 days. Just get off in the, you can drive by it in a truck, look out your window and see it, but you're not putting that scent down. The other mistake I see is people want to overbait or over lure their scent, their sets. Say you put it out and it, you ain't caught nothing in 3 days. Well, the inclination is, well, maybe I need to put more scent down. That's the worst thing to do. That scent is there, and it will stay there for days, if not weeks. I've caught coyotes 3 weeks after I make a set and never rebait it or re-lure it. They know it's there. They just have to get up enough nerve to come in on it where they feel more comfortable.
Speaking of that, you know, that makes me think, like, when, again, we'll go back to the weekend warrior scenario. I think probably most people listening to this are in that scenario. They don't have a week to go spend running their trap line. They got to do it on Saturdays and Sundays.
Right.
In that scenario, when you go back out Sunday to run your line and with the traps that, you know, well, you got to spring them all at that point. Yep. Do you just like to just leave them in the woods and let them sit there and become part of the landscape and let things get used to them being there and then come back at another date and reset them? Or would you pull them all together?
I've done it both ways. Pulling traps every weekend gets old, I can tell you.
Yeah.
That.
I've left mine out for just being lazy, you know?
Yeah, I mean, if it's with an earth anchor, what you can do is take a rock or a stick or something and jam it up under the pan of the trap, which keeps it from firing. It won't go off. And then if it's going to be a rainy week, take you a piece of a shingle and lay over top of that trap with a little bit of dirt and cover it. Then all you got to do is go back the next week and that trap, it'll be functional once you pull the rock or whatever out from under the pan. It should be all right. I mean, technically by law, if you're leaving, you're going to have to pull that trap anyway. Again, go back to the 24-hour trap check.
Right.
I mean, we want to do it right and we want to do it for the benefit of the animals. I mean,
definitely.
I have taught classes. Hunter ed classes for years, and I used to give a talk about trapping. And the response I got from people that didn't trap was, let's say, it wasn't real positive what they thought of us. But it's because of lack of knowledge. I mean, we're not out there to maim, mutilate, and torture animals. If anybody loves an animal more than a trapper, I don't know who he is. Because we're out there to dispatch a problem animal, manage the population for the benefit of other game species, and do it in a correct and precise methodology.
I can't agree more. You know, one of the things that I ran into doing this, taking it serious, really, is I just didn't know how successful I was being. I didn't really have any way to gauge if I had done well, if I needed to improve, do I need to research more? Am I doing everything right? And that's just how many you caught. So, to put some context with that, and I understand everybody's property is going to be different. Butch just may have more coons on his property and I may have more coyotes and he's going to catch more because he's got more kind of scenario. But how can a landowner monitor the success of what they're doing, their effort and its impact. Mm-hmm. I mean, like I'm looking at it last year and I think we trapped, I want to say we trapped 4 weekends, Mike, maybe 3 weekends, three or four weekends. And I think we caught about 10 nest predators, you know, between coons and possums. And, you know, I was looking at that and I said, well, it's 10 more than, I got 10 less than I had going into turkey season, which is right. better than none. But I didn't feel like I had caught that many on 200 acres.
No, you didn't. I guarantee you, you did not.
Yeah.
Even on marginal habitat. Yeah. Well, the thing about it is, if you want to get into it full time, you really need to be trapping year round. Year round. If you want to knock that predator population back, you will see an increase in turkey poult production. You will see more fawns if you do that kind of thing. I understand that the problem is that y'all are off 2-3 hours from where your property is.
Sure.
You might want to consider hiring a nuisance wildlife operator to come in there and do it. They do it for a week, then come back and spot check it in a month and just have a continuous presence out there working on those predators.
Yeah. It's good advice. How does somebody find somebody like that, Mike? If they're in their area and they really do want to get serious about this and they know that, hey, I'm going to have limited success trying to do this on my own, even though I may enjoy it and I may want to do it, just don't have the time, I'm not there enough. How can somebody find somebody like that?
Well, you would contact either your conservation department. They have a list of new co-operators by county. Just ask for that list, or you can contact the local state trapping association. And we have a list also by county, the guys that do that for a living. Of course, they don't do it for free, but I don't know anything that's for free anymore. Do you?
Not if it's worth anything.
No doubt.
People call me and they say, can you come and catch my beavers? Yeah. Then I'll give them a price. So they'll say, well, you can sell the fur. You'll make a lot of money. 2 years ago, I sold stretched and dried put up beavers for $4 a piece.
Oh no.
I wasn't making a killing, I can guarantee you.
No.
Yeah.
Heck no.
Yeah. I mean the price of fur has changed so much since when I was in college. I used to be able to sell a red fox for $100 a piece in the late 70s and early 80s. 2 years ago I bought stretched and dried reds for $7.
Oh wow.
And it's raccoon market. $45 years ago, 3 years ago, 57 cents a piece.
Man.
Wow.
Yeah.
Mike, you know, for folks, so that's definitely going to be in reach of some people. And I think, you know, just being honest about how much time you've really got to devote to this. I know when I go to my place, man, we've always got so much to do on the property. Mm-hmm. It's hard to. And I'd love to trap every trip I went, but it's hard to do it. You know, it's if you got to do prescribed fire and plant food plots and hang tree stands and fix camper problems and work on roads right. and put up gates and cut fallen
tractors
trees.
And
you know, there's just all it's endless. And so being able to run a trap line every single time is not really feasible for a lot of people. So I think there are some people that are just going to want to, hey, I just need some help and I can get some help. And that's a great resource. But for the folks that do want to do this on their own and they want to take it serious, and they want to put their energy into it. What would you say are mm-hmm. the most critical times of the year? If that's even a thing, like if you said, look, Mike, I can give you 2 weeks a year. I can give you 14 days of me hardcore trapping. When would you tell them to do that?
Well, again, if you're after predators before fawn drop, June, July, once those coyote pups are born in May, they're males and females are both feeding them. So you want to work on them then. Another time that's great is in September. Coyotes usually disperse from their den sites mid to early September. They're young, they're dumb, and they're easy. Let's put it that way.
Mm.
You can knock that population back pretty good in early September and October. The later in the year you go, like into January and February, late January, again, you're talking about breeding season. They're just like buck deer. They get something else on their mind. They're a lot easier to catch. those would be three prime areas. But like I said, it really needs to be an integral part of your management strategy on your property, where it's done consistently, not just 3 days here and 3 days there. Get somebody in there that knows what they're doing. They can, a little bit of money, they can take care of your problem, and they can manage those predators for you, which leaves you time to do more habitat improvement for your other species.
That's great advice, Mike. You know, we talked about dog-proof traps and other foothold-type traps, talk about lures. Do you have anywhere around Alabama or online that you recommend as far as a place to go check out for supplies for trapping and kind of get what you need?
Well, let me ask you this. I can pick out several. I just hate to leave anybody out, because one part of my position is I'm conservation director for the NTA, for the National Trappers Association.
Mm-hmm.
So I know people all over the United States that do this kind of thing. And I hate to leave them out, because they're great contributors to what we do.
Sure.
Here locally in Alabama, Fleming Traps in Raymer, Alabama, which is in Montgomery County, they donate a lot of stuff to our workshops with the kids. Another one is Duke Trap and Pecan over in West Point, Mississippi. Mr. T.A. is a great fella. They're all for teaching adults and kids. In fact, when I first started my program, I went to T.A. and I said, do you think you could donate a dozen traps for the kids, T.A.? He said, how many kids you going to have? I said, I don't know, 30 or 40. He said, I'll give you four dozen traps. How's that? Just to get you started. And he has consistently done that year after year after year.
That's awesome.
Another one is Down South Trappers. These guys are out of Tuscaloosa. They make great baits and lures. I utilize them quite a bit. Again, Down South Trappers. So those three here within Alabama, over in Georgia, you've got Southern Snares. Brian's a great asset. He puts out a great product. Any of those four guys, I would recommend full-heartedly try to take care of you. And the good thing about it, they'll talk to you about trapping too. They will sit and talk to you. So that can be a real benefit.
Yes, sir. Absolutely. Mr. Mike, you've done an awesome job of giving us the rundown this week on, you know, why and how we should trap the predators on our land, when, why, how, where. You've done a great job. I know you do the workshops there and you're heavily involved in the trapping associations. Where do you recommend people kind of go? Where would you point people if they want to get some direction, if they want to learn a little more, if they want to get in on one of your workshops that you guys do as a community? What's the best way for them to do that?
Well, they will be advertised on Outdoor Alabama. Just go to Outdoor Alabama, go to hunting, and scroll down to trapping. Those scheduled events will be up starting in October. We do workshops, like I said, from November all the way to the end of February. This past year, we did 9. I will probably add a few more next year. My only problem is I'm running out of weekends, and I'd like to see my grandkids every now and then, take them hunting and trapping too.
That's right. That's what it's all about.
But that's part of it. And another thing, if you want to be involved more, you're welcome. Anybody's welcome to come to our rendezvous that we have every year. We have two of them. We have a spring meeting and a fall meeting with the Alabama Trappers. In fact, it is March the 9th, this coming up. It'll be in Tuscaloosa. We'll have a fur buyer there from Louisiana to pick up any fur that you have. He will buy it green or frozen. It doesn't matter. He's really looking for beaver, but that's a good time. We always do demonstrations. We have a good fellowship. We all bring something to eat and just have a good time. So I'd like to welcome everybody to come to it if they could.
Well, Mike, it's been a lot of fun digging in on this. I know that there's a lot more to it than what we can cover in one podcast, but you've done a good job of getting us started. And thanks for sharing all those resources out there for people that may want to take this more serious or just find somebody to help them out with this issue. It's something that can make a big difference. And it's a lot of fun too. I mean, I have thoroughly enjoyed doing it. My kids enjoy it. My wife enjoys it. Everybody enjoys it. You know, it's just it's an extension of hunting season for me. And it really helps us utilize our property 365 days a year. I hope that more and more people will get active with it, even though there is no real fur market to speak of. There's a lot more reasons to do it than that. I think you've done a good job explaining that today. So thanks for joining us.
Yes, sir. Do I have time to tell you one story and then we can go?
I love story time.
Absolutely.
Okay, here we go. I was up in North Alabama several years ago around Scottsboro doing a workshop. There were 60 students in that class. That's a huge class. I drew the short straw. I got 5, 6, and 5-year-old kids with me. And we're in a beaver swamp. I'm walking down there and I showed them where the lodge was. I said, look at that. That's where the beaver lives, and had to explain it to them. They didn't know. I said, look at these tracks right here in this mud. What do you think did that? Beaver, Mr. Mike. I said, I think he's crawling up here eating these shrubs. Where do we need to put that trap? They said, right here. I said, okay. So we did. Went back there the next morning. Kids ran down there. It's like trying to confine a covey of quail. They just were running everywhere, having a big time. But we walked down there. They said, they're jumping up and down. They said, the trap's gone. The trap's gone. I said, look for it. It's out here somewhere. I saw the beaver floating out there. Went out and got it, threw it up on the bank. About a 60-pound beaver, a big one.
Wow.
Those kids were all fired up, and I looked at them. I said, the fun's over now. They looked at me and, what? I said, you grab a leg, you grab a leg. All four of you grab a leg, and one grab the tail and take that thing to my truck. Those kids started toting that beaver out. And they were laughing and having a big time. I looked back at their daddies, and I said, I'm going to tell y'all something. Right there is why I do what I do.
Yeah.
Just watch those kids.
Yeah.
So I like to relay that one to folks. That's a good story.
Yeah.
Yes, sir. That's awesome. That's what it's all about. Once you get them involved too, it's you get them hooked. It's beneficial for everyone.
Oh yeah. Yes, sir. Well, I've enjoyed it, guys. If I can help you anymore, just holler at me.
We will, Mr. Mike. Thanks for being on Hunting Land today. We enjoyed it.
Yes, sir.
Butch, I could tell from talking with Mike that I'm probably doing quite a few things wrong in terms of setting my traps, where I'm putting them, how I'm setting them, how I'm checking them, who I'm setting them with. You know, there's probably a lot of little things I'm doing wrong, but really the biggest thing is I'm just not doing it enough. It's what I really heard today.
You got to put in your time for sure. More time with bait and the traps. I mean, obviously that sounds fundamental, but it's going to be really hard to stay on top of your nest predators and your other predators. Just being a weekend guy, it's going to be hard. You might need a little bit of help.
I think so. If you're going to take it serious, yeah. I mean, you need a little bit of help. It's just like with prescribed fire, you know. I mean, I would love to live on my property and do the burns myself and do all the trapping and do every bit of work I can, but just not feasible.
Yeah, you just can't.
So, you know, I've got my consultant forester. He helps me out with that prescribed fire. And, you know, you start to build up. What I've noticed over the years is that you just start to build up your Rolodex of people that can really help you manage your property the right way. And there's benefits to that too, though. You know, I enjoy meeting people, talking to people, seeing their perspectives, learning from them, and then just having the help, you know, because sometimes you just can't get there, but it still needs to be done. And if you're trying to do it all yourself, it's just not going to get done all the time.
Right. Well, guys that do it every day can help you see around corners too. Yep. Can help save you some time in the long run. Couple things that I picked up definitely from Mike is scent. That's just something that you don't really think about whenever you're setting traps for predators, or I don't personally, as far as wind direction and, you know, wearing gloves whenever you're putting the bait in the trap and whenever you're checking your trap.
You think about it with that buck, you know, coming the woods, but you almost, it's almost just like you don't take it as serious, you know, you're like, oh, it's just a raccoon, just, you know, I see them in my trash can. You know, so yeah, I mean, if you're gonna catch a coyote, thinking about that, you know, I mean, you're talking about taking the whole landscape, you're trying to get that coyote to put his foot in the exact right spot, you know.
Right.
It's a lot that goes into it. It's fun to talk to those guys and see what all they take into account when they're pulling all this together.
Man, I would say this is probably our third year of trapping pretty heavily. Whenever we go up for any amount of time overnight, we're going to be trying to set at least several, 3 or 4 or 5 traps. And man, our turkey population this year seems to have exploded. So there's no doubt in my mind that it's making an impact.
Yeah, I've talked to some people, friends of mine that do it and are consistent with it. And, you know, they say the same thing. They can really tell the difference. I think it just boils down to, are you going to have to take time away from some other habitat management to trap, And if you are going to have to take time away from some other habitat management practice to trap, which one is the best use of your time? Because if it may be that you can find somebody to burn your place very easily, but you can't find somebody to trap. So you might be better off getting some help on the burning and you taking care of the trapping, or vice versa.
Sure.
But ultimately, you've got to look at how much time you've got on your property and figure out what's the wisest use of my sweat equity, because you've only got so much of that, and you can put a budget towards doing some other things on your property that meet your goals.
Yep, definitely agree, man. That was a fun show. Mr. Mike did a great job. I really enjoyed that one.
This week's show is brought to you by Baker Metalworks and Dixie Supply. Baker Metalworks and Dixie Supply offer numerous items to help get your project done right the first time. They carry a variety of different panel profiles and your choice of colors and gauges with all the matching trim and accessories. They also offer a full line of hardware items and post-frame building design. Their friendly and knowledgeable sales representatives are always willing to help answer any questions or concerns you may have. Contact them with any questions or to get a free estimate today. Baker Metalworks and Dixie Supply, your metal roofing headquarters. And also, Southern Seed and Feed. Do you want to provide better nutrients to your deer? If so, try Southern Buck Food Plot Blends. Your deer will love it. At Southern Seed and Feed, they specialize in making textured feed for horses, cattle, sheep, goats, hogs, chickens, small animals, and wildlife. Their products are proven irresistible, scientifically formulated to promote excellent herd health and hunter satisfaction. They supply products to various distributors throughout the South. So visit their website at southernseedfeed.com or call 662-726-2638 to find the dealer nearest you. And also brought to you by... The all-new Alabama Fishing Show is coming to Gadsden, Alabama at the venue at Catoosa Landing on George Wallace Drive, March 8th through the 10th. The only true fishing show in Alabama featuring all things fresh and saltwater fishing. If you fish, don't miss the latest fishing gear, equipment, and apparel. Custom tackle, lures, rods and reels, electronics, and guides. March 8th through the 10th. It's $12 for adults, $8 for kids, and 5 and under are free. There's a kids fishing tournament on Saturday, ages 4 through 12. Don't miss this event, March 8th through the 10th. Tickets are available online. You can learn more at alabamafishingshow.com. Well, that's going to wrap it up for us this week. Appreciate you joining us. We want to make it easy for you to listen, so here's a handy option for you. To get the podcast emailed to you each week, just text the word hunting to 773-770-4377. Again, just text the word hunting to 773-770-4377. You'll join our email list, and wherever you are listening to podcasts, go ahead, subscribe, rate, and review. Send us a written review. We'd love to hear from you. If you got a show topic that you are interested in and like to see us cover, just email us at pros@landhunting.com. That's going to do it for us. Y'all stay safe out there. We'll talk to you next time.